Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
Toucher. No police were called.
And Rich.
I am somewhat of a superhero.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That's a ground ball to third. Bregman, he's been great all night, and it's fitting that he is the one to secure a game one win for the Houston Astros. A little James Harden to boot, a Euro step, and an exclamation point on a victory for the Astros. A 7-2 road win.
There's a lot of hardware down there, you know, Cy Youngs and MVPs and All-Star games and all that stuff, but there's not too many World Series ring down there. I know they're hungry for one, and you know, they have a shot right now.
There's a drive into left field. That one going to stay fair. Pierce is watching, and this one is fair and gone. Bradley Jr., a high fly ball to right. Reddick is at the wall. Can only watch a grand slam. Jackie Bradley Jr., a knockout punch here in the eighth. And a high drive.
He worked in his craft. He found a few things that he really liked about his swing. Now he understands who he is as a hitter.
How about 9 2-out RBIs in his last 3 games? And the Red Sox are in the lead.
No one's gonna take me alive. The time has come to make things right.
Runners will be off with a crack in the bat with 2 outs.
You and I must fight for.
Deep in the left field, and J.D. Martinez with a home run. Austin strikes first. Red Sox 1-0.
Everyone with hands on. That's what it was going to take in order to beat a great team like Houston.
Yes, and now in the air, left field. That is hit well. Got some carry to it. That's going to fly. And this one is gone. Rafael Devers, a 3-run blast. It is 4-0 Boston.
Jr., and he is your ALCS MVP.
Some of the best fans in the world. To be bringing a World Series opportunity back to them and an American League championship back to Boston, I'm sure they're going nuts right now back home.
Five to Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. Jared Carrabas, he writes and does 10 podcasts. He's a big wig over there at Barstool Sports. Mr. Carrabas, hello, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen.
All right, so is there...
How did you celebrate? I just want to know.
Yeah, how did you celebrate and who did you take it out on?
I posted the video. We did like a live feed last night, and it was a very subdued celebration. I feel like all of us have been there before, and the celebration reflected that.
Okay, right. Were you surprised that they used Kimbrel last night?
No, because I think there was that issue. I guess for the past 2 weeks, apparently he was tipping his pitches. And they corrected that, so I think they kind of just wanted to go out and be like, you know, I think they said before the game that they saw that he was tipping pitches, and then if you send him out there in a save situation, they'd be like, yeah, look, you know, you didn't give up any runs for the first time since like last postseason. So it wasn't just a matter of trying to calm people down. It was a matter of being like, yeah, we saw the issue, we corrected it, and look, there you go, squirrel's appearance.
Okay, I know it was a subdued celebration you had, but there must have been a part of you that was almost, I don't know, irrationally excited to see David Price do what he did yesterday, knowing his track record.
I don't know if it was excitement. It was more just like I was so happy for the guy. We started talking back in like 2013, 2014, around there. So I know how much like last night meant to him. And, there's people that are probably going to say, you know, one start doesn't get the monkey off your back. Like, he's still going to do it again in the World Series. But do it again next year. It's a 7-year contract. You have 4 years left. And I understand that. I mean, you know, he has to continue to perform. But just to get that one and to have it be, on the road against the Astros, short rest for the first time in 10 years, to get to the World Series against one of the best postseason pitchers of all time, who is a former teammate of his. I'm sure all of that meant a lot to him. So I hope it continues, because I'm sure that, if he goes into the World Series and gets rocked, then it's right back to where he started. But, for last night, yeah, it was really awesome to see that he was able to go out there and leave no room for debate. This wasn't like, oh, no, he went six innings and gave up 3 earned runs and did the bare minimum to get a quality start. Like, no, he went out there and dominated and set a new career high for strikeouts and a postseason start and didn't give up a run. So it was a statement game for him. I'm glad that he did it, and I'm glad that he did it in the game that he did it.
All right, what do you believe is going on with Chris Sale? Because, I mean, if it was a stomach issue, and I know that we had, I forget what reporter came on and said he was walking around with Pedialyte, Sale doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would not want to pitch last night. After, what, 2-3 days, I think, since he had been out of the hospital? You would think he would want to get out there and do it. Do you think it's something else other than his stomach?
I'm sure it is. I'm sure that, you look at the velocity numbers, it was like he was airing out 95 in the eighth inning at Yankee Stadium in game 4. And then we saw the velocity numbers in game 1 against Houston. But, and then Alex Cora said that the stomach illness didn't come until the next day. So, you would still need an explanation for the dip in velocity in game 1 if it wasn't the stomach issue, which would apparently hadn't happened yet. So I'm sure it's a combination of both. I don't think that there's this big conspiracy theory where, they're using the stomach illness to cover up the fact that he got an MRI instead. I think they would just come and say that. There's no reason to hide that. We're all well aware that there was the shoulder issue for the second half of the season. So I'm sure it's a combination of both. Am I concerned about it, though? I think if he takes the ball in the World Series, he's going to give you everything he's got. And at the end of the year, for better or for worse, if the Red Sox win the World Series or they don't, I think that we're going to get some sort of announcement of what the real issue was. And I have a feeling that it's going to sound a lot worse than what we're being told it is right now. So no, it wouldn't surprise me if it was more than just the stomach thing.
With that in mind, Jared, where would you start Chris Sale? We were talking about this earlier. I contend that you give him as much rest as possible to get over whatever illness and whatever shoulder injury he has, and maybe wait until game 3 to pitch him and have Eovaldi and Price start games 1 and 2 in whatever order you want. What do you think?
I don't know. I think I would prefer, his numbers are so great at Fenway. I would maybe, I agree with you giving him as much rest as possible, but I would maybe eye a game 2 start if he feels up to it. And if not, then you kind of play it by ear. The Red Sox dismissed the Astros with 4 straight victories, 3 straight in their house, and that was without Chris Sale. So I'm still confident that the Red Sox, even if, God forbid, Chris Sale says, yeah, I can't take the ball, I'm still confident that the Red Sox win the World Series. So, yeah, I would say if you're going to slot him as a starter in this series, I would prefer that it be at Fenway Park. But you know, worst case scenario, I still think that you're in good shape.
I think the Red Sox would be favored against either National League team, but which one do you want to play? Dodgers have the better starting rotation. Milwaukee has the better bullpen.
I think the answer to the question is it doesn't matter. Like you said, I think the Red Sox are better than both teams. But for selfish reasons, I'd like to see the Brewers. You know, that's a fun team. You know, I like when new teams get a shot.
Travis Shaw.
My guy, Christian Yelich, that's my guy.
Oh, but there's so much more to mock with the Dodgers. I mean, you got Magic Johnson, you know, running the place.
But Yelich, Yelich looks like a guy that you would meet on the street. And then, you know. And
National League MVP.
I understand that, but he's not, like, huge. He's not, you know, it's a nice story. He looks like a normal guy. So give him a break.
He is a normal guy. That's the great part about Yelich is that he is a normal guy. But, yeah, if you get the Dodgers, I mean, the Red Sox are undefeated after an idiot on the opposing team talks trash. So that's the one guy that would probably say something that would rile up the Red Sox. Not say something, but probably do something, or maybe both. That guy's a moron. So if there's a World Series between the Red Sox and the Dodgers, I wouldn't mind that either. I think, you know, you get the star power on both sides. You get the two big markets. I'm more than fine with either team.
Do you have a problem with when these games are being played in the championship series?
No, I love going to bed at 4 a.m. It's my favorite thing to do. I love when I get over so late that after I write about the game, I go to bed at 4, and then I'm still expected to be in the office at a normal hour. So,
it's funny because people get on us, and they're like, I'm sorry. The game ends at 3:30, jackass. What job do you have? What possible job do you have where that does not affect you? If you're a grown man who has to make a living, what position are you in, you stupid idiot, that you can sit there for 12 hours a day watching baseball and go to bed at 4? Like, you know what? I have my options open. I think I'm going to watch every Godfather starting at midnight.
All right. I mean, poor Cry Me a River. F you. With your no job having.
It's true. I don't know how they do it. And it's, you know, the game, what was it? The game that they started at 8:40 and it got over at 1:30 in the morning. I was like, who is watching this right now? Like, who is, like, what type of, I mean, if it's your team, God bless you. If it's the playoffs and you want to stay up and you want to stay locked into that game, then all the power to you. But it is, I'm sure it's very difficult for a lot of people to drag their asses to work in the morning.
Jared Karabas, where can people find you? Where can people? You're in a multimedia platform. You tell me what to tell the people.
Yeah, we got Section 10. We got Starting 9. On the blog, I got my blog up this morning about just the whole backstory of this team and the road to the World Series that they've taken. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We got two new podcasts dropping today.
All right. Thank you so much. As always, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see you, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, Jared, definitely.
Game ends. I mean, you literally can't have... I mean, Karabas works for Barstool. I mean, I would imagine his schedule's fairly flexible.
Yeah, and he's like, this sucks.
No, there was no smartass of Jared this morning. That's the guy who went to bed at 4:30 and woke up for this phone call.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
All right. What is this? Murr from Impractical Jokers. Now... You say Impractical Jokers, what's going on over there? And I will tell you this, is that they are playing the Boston Garden. They are one of them bands, you know, like the Five, the Maroon Five.
Maroon Five?
Yeah, they play the Garden.
Or just the Five.
I'm not positive that the dude's here, but we can find out. If not, more Red Sox.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Are you ready for this?
Just 98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. Taking a break for a moment from your Red Sox talk, which I'm sure will infuriate a few people, but you can have to deal with it. All right, Impractical Jokers. So here's the deal. Impractical Jokers is a show that I'm aware of. And when I've seen it, I found it humorous. And So it's going on there. And then all of a sudden, we get offered a guest room in Practical Joker. They go, okay, great. And then you're playing The Garden. Now, okay.
Do you know how few comedians play The Garden?
It's like Kevin Hart. All right, so listen. All right.
We only sold 100 tickets, so.
Right. They're going to blanket the house. Yeah. Don't worry. It's really just 100 people show. They just was the only venue that was open.
This is Murr, James Murray from Impractical Jokers, if you've watched the show before. But, I mean, so... at what point is this your first like arena tour? I know you guys have toured before, but is this the first one where you're going in these houses that are 17,000 people?
It's pretty new for us. I mean, we did Madison Square Garden last fall, which was honestly a dream come true. And then we did Radio City a couple nights and stuff like that. But this is certainly the first big real arena tour. And it's awesome, man. As a New Yorker to play the Garden is unbelievable. And then Boston always comes out for us. So to play the Boston Garden, unbelievable.
Okay,
so excited.
Okay,
all right. So, okay. So, you know, you guys weren't on Saturday Night Live. You guys, this is a very, like, unique thing that you have. What is the background? I know nothing about it. What is the background? How did this get going?
I'll give you the background. We're four incredibly handsome, handsome guys.
Just Google it.
And when casting directors saw us, they're like, oh my God, these guys need a TV show. No, we're high school friends. We've been best friends for 30 years. We met literally freshman year of high school. We did comedy together in high school, then formed a comedy troupe after college. And then we failed miserably for like 12 years. We couldn't get anybody to pay attention. We're regular guys, you know? We weren't discovered. We didn't know somebody in the business. We just worked really hard for a long time, created jokes. And thank God it worked, and a network bought it, and that was it. And now it's in season 8 we're filming. It's crazy.
Okay, so you put yourself obviously in position. If people haven't seen it, it's very funny, and usually you're in the middle of a prank, or you get chosen to do a prank, or it kind of goes around, and there's an earpiece where your friends are telling you awkward things to say. Okay, has there ever been a situation where... the police might have gotten involved? Because essentially you're causing disturbances everywhere you go.
Sure. The police have been called twice. I'll tell you one story. That being said, the hook of our show is that the joke is on us.
Yeah.
Right. Nobody's getting embarrassed. It's just us getting embarrassed.
Sure. But it's still a scene. And it's still people freak out when they see something it's not as it should be.
Yeah. The one time the cops got called in particular is we were working at a supermarket, right? And Sal's behind the counter ringing customers up. And the woman hands him her credit card. And so to embarrass him, we're like, Sal, nonchalantly, take out your cell phone and snap a photo of her credit card before you swipe it, right? She lost her you-know-what. She starts screaming. She calls 911. She thinks she's having her identity stolen, right? And the cops come. They come in and they calm her down, you know, and talk her off the ledge. And they come back in. We're like, shoot, we're going to get busted, right? And the cops say, guys. We're huge fans of the show. Can we take a photo with you? It's like, oh my God. Thank God it worked out.
Well, there's got to be also times, too, where you're doing these stunts and you pull a prank on somebody and you're like, this is going to be amazing. I can't wait to air this. And you probably get somebody who you did it to who doesn't find it as funny and won't sign the release.
Well, the show is as hard to make now as it was day one, because if they know the show, they can't be on the show.
Right.
The show is real.
Yep.
So you're still, season 8, trying to talk strangers into signing a release for them, giving away their firstborn son.
Right. Without a doubt. So now, what was the best prank that you ever pulled where, like, the person... refused to sign the release? Was there a situation?
You see it on the TV. Sometimes we blur their faces, you know? But it only works if the joke's so funny physically that you don't need their reaction.
Yeah.
But most of the time, we just have to scrap the footage. It's crazy.
Okay, the one predicament that your friends put you into that made you the most uncomfortable, because you've done a million of these things. At some point, I would think you would get numb. But what was the one that really made you the most nervous?
Speaking of numb, they had a dentist, inject me with 180 milliliters of Novocaine, which is the legal limit. Like, you can't, one more, you go to jail, right? right before I had to go in and give a presentation on how to cook, you know, foods from around the world. So there's like 50 people in the room as the Novocaine's hitting me, and I was a slurring, babbling idiot.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was literally drooling, sampling these foods. It was ridiculous.
Okay. Now, was that the one where you're the most uncomfortable? Or?
No.
What was that one?
Well, I mean, they made me get 2 prostate exams in front of a room full of 100 guys. That was uncomfortable.
Oh.
That being said,
I won't do that.
in my personal life.
Yeah, I'm good for 20 years now because every 10 years you got to go.
Or you just stocked them all. You just stockpile of the attention.
How do you end up with that one? Because now you got my attention.
All
right.
So you draw straws for that?
Yeah. How does
exactly?
So how does it come to be that you're the one who has to get the couple prostate
My exams? Three idiot best friends designed it for me. They know what's going to embarrass me the most, and my butt does that.
Have you ever said no?
You can't say no to a punishment, but you can say no to a challenge. That's how you lose and get punished.
Okay. So give me one that you said no to.
Oh, gosh. A challenge that I've said no to?
I mean,
you know, we all have Achilles heels. You know, my Achilles heels are, you know, I'm single and 42 and sleep with a blankie. So my Achilles heels are beautiful women. Or I just get nervous and I would never disrespect a woman. And then elderly, you know, my elders I respect greatly. And they use that against me constantly. They had my father. They made me, as a punishment, teach my father how to use a cell phone, mm-hmm. but they used my personal cell phone, had it displayed on a big screen, so I had to take my father through all my text messages, my photos. He wasn't having it.
That's great. Now, what are the Achilles heels for the other three guys that you work with?
Well, Joe's now married, so, and he has children, so we just filmed the Joker's movie. It comes out in theaters next year.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we use his children against him in the movie. Sal's Achilles heels are everything. He's a paranoid, delusional man.
Okay.
And then I'd say women too, you know, because he's charming and respectful and
okay.
And yeah. So.
What is the Impractical Joker's Mona Lisa? Like the one that, you know, has the that everyone, it's like, you know, the free bird of the Impractical Jokers.
I would say probably me. They I'm a terrified of heights, so they punished me and took me up on an airplane and threw me out of it. Thank God they gave me a parachute, right? And I went cry diving, as I say. I screamed like a small infant on the way down to the ground.
So
it was very funny.
It was just you? You weren't on the back end?
No, they had a guy on my back.
I was just going to say, now that's bad.
It was scary. I'd say cry diving was probably the most.
Okay, so you're on True TV, which, you know, is, unfortunately, it's a network that it's tough to find.
It's channel 1 million. Yeah.
But you're wildly successful enough so that you're playing the TD Garden. Have you guys ever been approached by another network?
Well, we just a week ago announced that we're doing another show on TBS. It's called Misery Index. It'll be on next year. It's like a game show. The four of us are in it. It's funny as hell. It's going to be fun.
So Misery, and what happens?
You know, I can't say the word on the radio, but you know the game S Happens, you know? It's like a board game in stores. It's kind of like where you rank things that are awful or embarrassing in your life. Yeah. So let's say, for example, you have a job interview, and right before you step in a big pile of you know what, right?
Yeah.
How is that rank on a scale of you walking in on your girlfriend sleeping with her ex? You know what I mean?
Okay.
And you have to rank it. And they have the four of us as comedians, kind of commenting on the whole thing. It is very, very funny. So that'll be on TBS next year.
Excellent.
All right. Yeah. So how do you translate what you do on TV to a massive arena?
There's a giant screen behind us on stage where we shot hidden camera challenges just for the live show. You can't see anywhere else. And then it's like a stand-up comedy show. The four of us are on stage ripping into each other, talking about the show, our lives. It is very much it feels like a rock concert, but it is like seeing your best friends hanging out with your best friends for a night.
Okay. And even though that's the case, you work with your best friends, there's got to be days where you're just like, I don't want to go to work.
Yeah.
Because this is going to be, they're going to have me do something that totally sucks.
I only got to be funny 25% of the time. So that's easy, you know?
Now, in the movie, can you do stuff that you haven't been able to do on television?
Yes, that was the best part of the movie because we finally had like some money to do stuff.
Yeah.
And the punishment, and there's many punishments throughout the movie, and there's a punishment at some point in the movie where it is crazy. It's so crazy they had to take a $15 million life insurance policy out on me.
Oh, on you?
Yeah.
So you get the worst of it.
I always get the worst of it, man.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in the business. Get the worst of it. All right, Impractical Jokers. Pronounce the name of the show for me. The Krangis McBasketball World Comedy Tour?
Yeah, it's one of the fake characters we create in the show.
Okay.
Yeah. Starring the Tenderloins that is coming.
it rolls right off your tongue, man.
Yeah. I feel really professional. It's at the Garden, 7 p.m. January 20th. Can you buy tickets now?
You can. When you say the name altogether, when you see it printed on a ticket, the ticket is the size of a shoebox.
Yeah, it's like when they present you when you've won the lottery. Right.
Yeah.
All right.
And you're at, where is it? Foxwoods tonight? Is that what you said?
Foxwoods this weekend. tonight and tomorrow night, four shows at Foxwoods, and then we'll be here at the TD Garden in January.
It's like, I mean, these guys are making $1 million. We're sitting here getting up at 4:30 in the morning like idiots. All right, thank you so much, man. We appreciate
you guys.
It.
Awesome.
Here are the headlines.
Sports Hub.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
985 The Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. The stack is brought to you by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare.
So Charles Barkley was on ESPN the other day. I believe it was Pardon the Interruption. And he was asked by Tony Kornheiser, what can stop the Golden State Warriors from winning another championship this year? And Barkley's answer is there's only one team.
I think realistically, the only team you can beat them is the Boston Celtics. The Celtics are loaded. Now, they got to make it work because they have an overabundance of talent. But on paper, because I think the Rockets took a step back. The Rockets took a step back, losing Luke and Trevor. But on paper, now it's just on paper, the Celtics got more talent. They got more talent than the Golden State Warriors.
How about that,
Whoa.
Tony?
Whoa.
I don't know if I would agree with more talent. Maybe more people who are talented?
Golden State is top-heavy. I think that's what Charles is trying to say. Golden State is top-heavy while the Celtics, depth-wise, haven't beat.
Because I would say that there's more players that are talented, but
Golden
just
State
the level
has
of talent
five
on Golden
All-Stars.
State.
And they have one generational player.
Yeah,
they have two generational players. Two. I would say Steph Curry. You would include him, too.
I'd rather have Draymond Green than Steph Curry, and I'm not just saying that because I like Draymond Green, but obviously I'm referring to Durant.
No, I understand. Well, Durant's the guy. But I would say that Steph Curry also is a generational player.
But ultimately, you know, Golden State has five tremendous players, and then what? While the Celtics have two very good players in Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward, and then they got about seven or eight other guys who can play 20 or 25 minutes on any given night.
And you know Tatum's going to be very good, but right now, I mean, he's not. I mean, he's what he is.
Tatum's on his way, but not there yet. Yes.
But hey, you know what? It's one of those things where if you've got an entire bench that can go in and give you that amount of minutes, you know, maybe you just can wear him out. It's going to be interesting to find out. And they've always played the Golden State Warriors well, and by the way, I had somebody tell me, did you see Golden State during game one? Oh, they didn't look very good. And then I'm like, we're going to be good.
It's Golden
They're
going
to be good.
Well, Carmelo,
you don't have to worry about
that. They played in the finals. They should have won four championships in a row. They played a lot of basketball. Golden State's going to win like 55 games this year because in the middle of the season, they're not going to try. Well, they're going to play, you know what, we'll be there at the end, and people can say, what has happened to Golden State? And they're going to rip through the playoffs again.
Well, they're already blaming Carmelo Anthony for the way Houston started.
Once again,
the man's the cooler. Wherever he goes, man.
How do you not know by now that Carmelo Anthony kills your team? There's two players in the NBA that if you have either one of them on your team, you're never going to win a championship. Carmelo Anthony and Dwight Howard. Either one of those guys, it's just, and they're so unbelievably talented, but they just suck the life out of any player that's on that court.
I would argue that Carmelo Anthony is not talented anymore.
Maybe now.
A lot of miles on him.
Five years ago, he was unbelievable.
He's a shooter who can't shoot. Yeah, he was great.
Well, he can shoot whether it goes in or not.
He's coming off the bench now.
He can make the ball go in the air.
Because he's definitely shooting plenty.
Yes.
Not passing enough.
And then, I don't know why on a team that... Have you ever seen James Harden play defense?
No.
I just saw something the other day, and it was the top 10 worst defensive plays by James Harden. And there's one where he's standing in the key, and he's about a foot south of the free throw line, and a guy runs by him and dunks.
Yeah.
And he does not move.
No, he gets his ankles broken. He's probably the star that gets his ankles broken more than anybody else in the NBA.
There are two states of mind with James Harden. There's dribbling and waiting. There's shooting and then waiting to shoot.
By the way, these were not ankle breakers. These were, like, I'm not
trying.
Moving. I'm not going to move.
Sure. But you have seen it. I mean, I think you've seen the Celtics do it several times where he can't hang. But then again, when you're scoring as much as he is, then I guess it makes up for any kind of lack of defense. Well, Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports came out with a more expansive update on the whole cheating thing that everyone's been talking about. He said that Major League Baseball was alerted to an unauthorized coach being on one of the team's benches during the ALDS between the Red Sox and the New York Yankees. The coach was asked to leave the dugout, though Passan didn't specify which team he was working for. There was also paranoia in game 163 between the Colorado Rockies and the Dodgers, as they said that there were concerns of someone signaling batters from center field and signals being relayed from the tunnel to third base, the third base coach, onto the hitter. So, I mean, I'm sure as technology advances, it's just going to get tougher and tougher. I just like the fact that they found out about Kimbrel apparently tipping his – which pitch was it? It was his –
breaking ball.
His breaking ball? Yeah, tipping that. And apparently once they dealt with it, we saw what we saw last night where
– I mean, it's one – let's see. Let's see. It's one
– all I know is that this all kind of lines up.
Like Price, I hope last night – you know, is able to replicate itself once we get to next week. We'll see.
Well, guess what comes out of the theaters today? The brand new Halloween movie that says, hey, remember all the Halloweens that were between Halloween 1 and this one? Just forget they ever existed.
Is Halloween 1 even a good movie?
Yeah, it's very good. And I hate slasher movies, but Halloween 1 is so well made. I mean, not only just the fact that he was before Jason, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought he preceded Jason.
By the way, Dan and I had this conversation off air. It was so dumb that I quit watching it an hour into it.
Oh, the movie It?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just don't like to see kids get
I lasted about
40
murdered. Minutes, yeah.
Yeah, I the original It was kind of funny with, what's his name?
The creepiest,
Curry?
Yeah, the creepiest guy on the planet.
Yeah, yeah. I just skipped it. But Halloween, it was kind of, was awesome because he didn't run the killer. He was kind of quiet. And like the music made the film. Like this, the soundtrack. If they didn't have the soundtrack, it wouldn't be near the classic that it was. But apparently, they said all the stuff that happened between this first one and now, just forget any of it ever existed.
So what's the hook?
Okay, so I've been reading about this because I actually do want to see it. And I once again, I don't like slasher movies, but I heard this is really good. That the way Michael gets back into killing is that it's these people who are doing a crime podcast. Go and to interview him, and I guess that's where things kind of get out of control. I don't know how he escapes, but it's all spurred by these true crime things that everyone's doing nowadays. My cousin, who did the one that became all right. Famous and yeah, stuff.
It's Liv Schatz and Murray. I mean, their podcast is when everyone went bankrupt on the game that they predicted last night.
It's the Dude and Bird Show, yeah.
The Dude and
they
Bird
showed
show.
Up and it just
are you still
breathe.
Doing the Dude and Bird Show?
When's
that?
No,
yeah, that seems like something that ran out of steam.
Oh, that kind of stinks. Well, the reviews are pretty good on it. They're saying 83%, and a lot of people like it. They say that Jamie Lee Curtis is excellent in it, and there's at least two or three hell yeah moments where you pump your fist if you're indeed in the crowd watching it. So see it at your own risk.
Enough anxiety in my life. I don't need to. Artificial anxiety.
Scariest movie you've ever seen at the theater.
I've never seen a horror movie at the theater.
Really?
No, but the scariest movie I've ever seen is Sleepaway Camp.
Well, I know. The girl's the dude and the...
And then the mom is... No. And it looks like a porn because like it's shot all grainy and crappy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've never seen a horror movie in the theater. Never.
Oh, you kind of got to live through that experience. It's pretty great.
I'm living fine.
Where everyone's screaming at the screen and everything. It's all right.
I don't like being in the dark at the theater anyway. And then you got some dark-ass... creepy movie up there? No way.
I told you, the movie The Descent, that is one of the scariest films I've ever seen. I saw it in a theater. The movie The Descent is like a group of six women who they every year they go on like this adventure or whatever, and this year they're going to go splunking to this place in West Virginia, and they go into these caves. And so the first like 30 minutes of the movie, it's just building the tension that they're in these really confined spaces and that they, you know, they have to squeeze through, and then all of a sudden, oh, they're trapped inside these caves and they can't get out. That's the next 30 minutes. And then all of a sudden they all start turning on each other. And just when the tension couldn't get any worse, oh, there's like a breed of human being who have been down here for generations who got stuck here, these old miners who morphed into being able to see in the dark and now they want to eat your brains.
Okay, so were you by yourself when you saw that?
No, I saw my wife was
with me. Okay, because I was going to say, if you can sit through that by yourself.
Oh, that movie rules. I mean, that was...
And then you start eyeing everyone around you.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, why are all these creeps here?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, like, how are they getting off on this? This is strange.
Well, you did see...
The Human Centipede by
human
myself.
Centipede by yourself.
I did.
But wasn't that like a TV in like a rec room?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was the Human Centipede. I saw it at the Coolidge. You know, the Coolidge has like four theaters. There's the big one. There's like a kind of big one above it. And then there's one that's like a closet with four, like it's like four chairs. Now, you know what else I saw in that closet with four chairs? I saw that movie Zoo. About the guy who like had that cult who hooked up with horses.
Yeah, it was a bestiality.
It was me, Mary, and a guy sitting in the back in a coat, big long coat.
Yeah,
not a fun. It was a romantic date. If that's what you're asking.
It doesn't sound like a good time.
No, it does not. So the Fortnite World Cup That is something that is happening, just like that whole Overwatch League that I went to. But they are going to be running ads during its online broadcast. And now, let me just tell you this. Super Bowl ads cost approximately $5 million for 30 seconds. Can you guess how much the Fortnite World Cup partnership ad is going to cost online?
A million.
30 seconds.
A million.
It was $5 million for the Super Bowl. How many for Fortnite?
The 30 second, the 30-second Doritos million. Commercial.
Higher.
Wow. 2.5.
No, higher than 5.
Oh.
Higher than the Super Bowl.
Oh, 7?
$25 million.
What?
Dollars.
Now, how many commercials are they showing?
$25 million, they are saying. So, okay, it says right here, it goes, the asking price to sponsor the event, it's already 5 times as much as the typical advertisement during the NFL's Bowl. It's approximately $5 million. They said it would be for something slightly deeper than just a spot. So you probably end up getting like maybe
branded.
3 or 4 branded, but still 25, like a scroll.
That's
$25 million.
When our kids are our age, they're going to be, that's all they're going to be watching. And you can, and it is what it is. That's what they're going to be watching.
Yep.
Competitive gaming.
The Fortnite League. I wonder why it took so long to put this together.
I don't know, because it seems like Fortnite, it's brought up, run its course. But it just keeps hanging in there.
Well, I mean, when the Overwatch League, it was crazy. I went to the Barclays Center and they sold that place out. It was like 20,000 people screaming. And I kept thinking to myself, if this is this crazy, and this isn't even the most popular video game out there, because at that time Fortnite was everything, then I can't even imagine what would happen if they tried to monetize Fortnite.
Oh, please don't let my son find out about this.
I took Hank to the Overwatch League thing, and I was very pleasantly surprised that he was just confused by everything.
Oh, well. He needs Ninja to explain it to him. All right, so we'll be right back. Find out what Zone Beetle have in store. I'm a Red Sox fan, and I can die. I'm a Red Sox fan, and I can die.
All the meatballs are gone.
98.5, the Sports Network, Toucher and Rich. Jay, go ahead.
I was at a bar when this song first played, and Mudflap Junior Jones was unbelievable.
That is the name. It's not. It is Mudflap Junior Jones, I think, is the name of the band that made this.
That's what he said.
Not Flap of Scrotum, Fred's band earlier in the show.
What's going on with these mics are flashing?
What's that?
Are they?
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's the people back at the studio doing stuff.
I don't know what's going on. All right. It's not a scrotum flap.
Flap of Scrotum was what
Flap
you...
Flap of Scrotum.
Yeah, that was the name of your band that you came up with.
Apparently saves you from vibrations from a bat. All right. Scott, did you enjoy the game last night?
I did, and I enjoyed Devers' home run because that was the capper, and he could sort of breathe out, relax after that one. But Wiggy's out there petitioning us to have a high school football segment. I recommended him to your show.
I heard him. When I got myself one of them sodas... He was talking about how his kid plays for Central Catholic.
Yeah.
And they might go up against the mighty Everett.
Did you see that story where Malden said, "We're not going to play you, Everett. We forfeit because we don't want to get hurt."
We had Vernon here and he broke it down
for
us.
But Scott, don't you find it odd that for all these years that the town of Everett, the people, the student body of Everett High School is so physically superior to all the neighboring towns.
It's amazing. Like it's only amazing. In that water. There's something in the water in Everett.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It might be age. It might be loss of birth certificates. But the great thing is, and Paul Perillo went to Everett, and he said, here's the saddest part of that story. They have
and
this
he's
big.
The most successful guy to ever come out of there.
No. He said that the big rivalry with the town, they do a luncheon between the two teams. They forfeited, and they're still going to do the luncheon. Oh, so they're going to make these poor kids from Malden sit there at a lunch. And if I was everybody from, I would make fun and roast these kids.
Oh, sure.
From Malden.
Guys, all I know is that he's within 5 feet, so.
They hate us! They shut up
ourselves! Shut up ourselves! Shut up ourselves! Shut up ourselves! Manja. It means eat. Manja. It means eat.
Wiggins told me he doesn't go to sleep until like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Wiggy's got his kid's medium Red Sox jersey on right now.
Your middle finger is so
long. I know. His middle finger is one of those ones where you just curve your knuckle. like it's not like he's holding them. He's like curving his knuckles.
Is your show over?
You have the longest middle finger.
Technically, it's not.
Wiggins will come up to me and like recite murder numbers in Boston.
Shouldn't you be taping some hip-hop food segment?
One time he came up to me.
Hip-a-hoppa?
I was like, hey, and he goes, 23 murders in Boston this year.
Hey, like, how are you?
Okay.
Well, it's been good talking to you.
19 in Dorchester.
47 murders in Boston.
Okay.
And I go, that doesn't seem that high. And he's like, F you.
That's like every day in Chicago.
Yeah, it's like one day on the south side.
I'm a nice man.
We're all baseball today, except when Phil Perry's in.